Y'all already know who I am. My name's Topher, and I thank Olivia.
Hi, I'm Rachel Hampton.
And I'm Natish Pawa. You're listening to ICYMI.
In case you missed it.
Slate's podcast about internet culture.
And today, we are welcoming back Natish, a Slate staff writer who you probably just heard on this past Saturday's episode, where he explained some drama rocking the online chess world over the past few months. It involved, shockingly, anal beads. So, if you haven't listened yet, I can't recommend the episode more highly. Hello, Natish. Thank you for joining me again to not talk about anal beads this time.
Hello. Yes, I'm glad we're doing something else, focused less on potential sex toy cheating sports scandals.
Yeah, people should be using sex toys for enjoyment, not for cheating scandals.
Exactly. No kink shaming, except if you're cheating.
No, exactly. What we are here for, though, is to talk about the biggest injustice in Grammys history since the last biggest injustice that probably happened last year, because I don't keep up with the Grammys unless they do something egregious, like robbing Renaissance of Album of the Year. Anybody who listens to the show or knows me knows that I'm a Harry Styles fan and have been since the One Direction days. So I can say, and will be completely objectively right in saying that his album did not deserve to win over Renaissance or even Bad Bunny's album. Like, what the fuck is happening here? What is going on?
While I wish I could say I'm like shocked and surprised by what they've done again to Beyoncé, it unfortunately is not. This is just what the Grammys have unfortunately always been. I mean, no shots at Harry Styles, who's a wonderful, extremely talented young boy, but I'm sorry, but compared with his album before this new one that he just got so decorated for, pretty mid, I gotta say.
Wow.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
You like the fine line better than Harry's house?
I think I do, yes.
That's a hot take.
I'm just saying, you know, Fine Line had a Adore You, and the new one did not. So that's just how I'm approaching this, frankly. But
that is true. That is true. Anyway, if we keep talking about this, my blood pressure is gonna go off the charts, and I don't have the money to pay for that. So let's pivot to what we're actually here for. But before we get into that, I have a very important question for you that has nothing to do with Jesus or your first internet memory.
Oh boy.
How do you pronounce the name for the thing that tells you when someone's seen your message? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah, read receipts.
As you should. It's time for another edition of Read Receipts.
I want to see the receipts.
Today, we'll be answering questions about the new kings of TikTok, Keith Lee and Topher. And we'll also be explaining what exactly is happening with everyone's favorite Twitter bots, the fun ones that tweet things like magical realism and Hozier lyrics, not the ones that are racist. all of that after a short break.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
The new Starz series, Mary and George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true. But shockingly, it is. With next to nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villiers sets her handsome and charming son, George, on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. Trust me, you've never seen a mother-son duo like this before. The show is full of wit, scandal, action, and did I mention Julianne Moore? Something this audacious and sexy as is genre-bending as it gets. You won't be able to look away. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Starz and the Starz app.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
And we're back. We've got a voice memo from our listener, Rebecca.
Hi, ICYMI. I was wondering if you could tell me who Topher is and why I'm seeing him constantly on TikTok.
We sure can, Rebecca. Tish, are you at all familiar with one Topher? Not Topher Grace, which I think is the only other famous Topher. Pardon me if you're another famous Topher I'm not familiar with.
Actually, no, I'm not familiar with this Topher, which once again makes me wonder just how much my feed is making me miss out on at this point. I missed Menswear Guy. Now I'm missing Topher.
I know, you're really missing all the hits here. Well, luckily you have a podcast and a friend to show you the way.
Thank goodness.
So Topher refers to a 9-year-old boy whose full name is Christopher. Mm-hmm.
Okay, sorry. I just
I love that we're already starting off.
He's nine?
Shock. He's nine. God. Yeah, he's a 9-year-old. His full name is Christopher Russell. And here's where I admit something that may be embarrassing. I didn't realize until today that Topher is a shortened version of the name Christopher. I just was like, this is another white people name. It's like, I apparently it's not. I guess it makes more sense than like Peggy, but also what happened to Chris? You know, what are we doing here?
Yeah, I mean, and in fairness to you, it's not like it's pronounced tougher, you know?
Exactly.
It's Topher.
Anyway, white people naming conventions aside, Topher's rise to fame began last December when his sister and TikToker Allison Russell posted a video introducing her dad's side of the family. And they were playing this game, which is very popular on TikTok, which is, if someone were to join our family, who should we warn them about?
If you were to introduce someone into our family, who would you warn them about?
My name is Kevin, and I warn them about Topher.
Y'all already know who I am. My name's Topher, and I thank Olivia.
My name is Olivia, and I would warn them about Topher.
Oh my god. What just happened?
That's a great question. So, in this video, Allison, I'm assuming, is asking her family, you know, who they should warn each other about. And someone picks Topher, who is this 9-year-old child, who, you know, the video is giving him the glare in his eyes that I think really only happens to people with blue eyes. And it kind of makes you look like a little bit demonic, which is not helping the situation. And it means that the comments on this video go something like, Topher's an icon in the making, I'm sorry. Or, Topher's the reason I don't let my feet dangle off the bed. Or, Topher's a menace to society.
He's basically 9 years old.
Which they're alluding to both Topher's iconic introduction of, y'all already know who I am, and the fact that he, unfortunately, in the parlance of TikTok, looks like one of those kids that bites. You know what I'm talking about, right?
I do, yes.
Okay. So that video's been viewed over 51 million times. And it kind of went immediately viral and continues to, in that despite the fact that this video was posted about a month and a half ago at this point, a lot of the comments when I last looked at them are from like 2 to 3 hours ago, which means that it's still finding its way into people's feed or people are looking for it. And it seems like a lot of people are looking for it because a huge subset of the comments are like, Is this the original?
Interesting. Yeah, it's like one of those TikToks with a much longer shelf life, probably being like shared over text or TikTok DM and such.
And one of the reasons that people are asking about whether or not this is the original is because the audio of Topher saying, "You already know who it is," has been remixed and memed to infinity.
Okay, you know what? I do recognize that sound clip now. I thought that that did sound familiar, and yes, it is that audio loop. I have been hearing this. Oh, wow. Okay. Nice connection moment here. Okay, thank you, Rachel, and thank you to
You're welcome. Incredible. Well, yeah, the Topher hashtag has over 1 billion views at this point, and they're referring to this child. It's quite frankly wild to think about, like, a 9-year-old child being viewed over a billion times on this platform, and I don't really want to think about it too hard, which is a sentiment that comes up on the show a lot. Speaking of sentiments that come up on the show a lot, nothing's new on the internet, including Topher. The thing we're here to talk about.
let me guess. He went viral when he was 5.
Honestly, wow, that was a pretty good guess.
Wait, really? Yeah, oh my God.
I was like, wait.
Wait a minute. Yeah, I legit did not know that. I just threw that
out
there.
You're stealing my thunder here. But yeah, that December video wasn't his first brush with TikTok fame. His sister started posting him like a lot after an April video of him doing the Sprite challenge started going viral. I'm pretty sure the Sprite challenge is just drinking Sprite as fast as possible.
Okay, here's part two to the Sprite challenge.
Part two of the Sprite challenge with a McDonald's
We have Sprite. A McDonald's Sprite with no ice, so it's full to the top. So,
and it's cold.
Where's the puke bucket?
Puke bucket.
Give it to Lauren so I can be goner.
Okay.
But Topher's presence on his sister's TikTok page explains partially why he says, "Y'all already know who I am," because people who were familiar with Allison's content would know who he was. Because honestly, once you see that child once, how could you ever forget him?
Yeah, like, so how is he, or I guess his family, the Topher industrial complex, how is this playing out now?
Well, since the viral December video, he's continued making TikTok content with his sister. Here's a video of him literally running into a wall that has over 24 million views. I can't explain it any more than I just explained it.
Y'all already know who I am. My name is Topher, and I wish Morgan a happy 20th birthday.
So he is doing a combo Vine / Cameo?
Yeah, pretty much. But also, again, you're stealing my thunder. Speaking of Vine, his sister is posting old content of him, including a video of him as a literal baby, like infant, from a Vine.
Topher, change the channel. Gonzaga's up by 30. Really, dude? Really?
Oh my God.
I know. Topher was a very cute baby. It's also a very cute child. He's just one of those children that has a face that's just mischievous. Like, you look at that child and you're like, you're up to mischief.
Yeah, we knew even before TikTok was a thing that he would be a TikTok star.
I mean, clearly, and his family did too. Like, the fact that this Vine exists suggests to me that Topher's stardom has been in the making for a while and it's just finally paying off. Like, part of his stardom, I think, is the fact that he has a Southern accent, and people are very much enamored by children with Southern accents, which makes sense. True. Because when I hear a child with a British accent, I'm like, that's fucking crazy. Please continue speaking. Like,
right, yeah.
So I get it. But what this means is that he's already doing SpawnCon, including for Benefit Cosmetics, which is a crossover I would not have anticipated, but...
No. Does he have, like, great skin?
He's a child. Of course he has great skin.
Well, there you go. I guess there's some logic there.
Sure. He's also been invited to sit courtside at his favorite basketball team's game. I don't know a basketball team because I don't know sports. He's also been in a video with his favorite celebrity, Mr. Beast, who for some fucking reason keeps coming up on this show ever since Kelsey Weekman was here explaining Mr. Beast to me. This isn't even the last time we're going to mention him today. I don't understand how this man went from someone I didn't know existed, barely knew existed, to being at the center of every single story we're telling. It's a conspiracy. It's a conspiracy. Mr. Yeah. Beast is trying too hard to be on the show.
It's the new industry plant, but for yes. internet content.
Wow. Yeah. Mr. Beast is an industry plant. You heard it here first. Well, I hope that answered your question, Rebecca. The answer to your question about Topher is that Mr. Beast is an industry plant. That's where we ended up at.
Wow. I did not expect us to end up here. I think when you mentioned Topher, I was literally picturing just Topher Grace, even though you expressly said he is not Topher Grace.
That's really fair. I don't know what else you would imagine if you have no familiarity with this child. But honestly, that's enough on this child named Topher, because we do have to go on to our next question, which is something I think you probably know a lot about, unlike Topher. This time we're answering a question about Elon Musk's continued journey into ruining Twitter. On February 2nd, the official Twitter dev account tweeted, "Starting February 9th, we will no longer support free access to the Twitter API, both V2 and V1.1. A paid basic tier will be available instead." In the spirit of transparency, I'm going to admit, the first time this appeared on my timeline, I was like, I don't know what the fuck this means. I don't know what this means for me. I don't know what this means for the platform, which is why I'm glad you're here with me today. Because what is an API? I have a vague idea. I know that this is bad. I know why it's bad, but it's like how you can get to the end of a math problem without understanding calculus. That's how I feel right now. You know, I don't understand the formula at the beginning of this, but I know the answer is 6, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. It is definitely weird. And it is interesting, I think, that developments like these now put these sorts of more coding specific languages out there. Not that I'm a coder myself, I just am a nerd, but
it's the same thing.
Yeah, basically. So an API stands for Application Programming Interface. And to really just boil it down to its simplest definition, it's an interface which allows either two computers or like two different forms of software essentially to communicate with each other. And that can mean like, you know, trading, you know, certain programming capabilities, pieces of code, functionalities, and so on. So yeah, in this case, when Musk is talking about Twitter's API, so you have a lot of applications out there generally, like Spotify and others, that offer up their API like for free access. And this allows basically like a lot of people who are code savvy to like use the advantages of said platform's interface for their own purposes if they'd like taking the skeleton basically without ripping off the entire thing. So yeah, people have used APIs in the past for a lot of their own purposes. It's very much in keeping with like the whole like open source ethos of the web and a lot of programming. So yeah, and Twitter's API was part of this because, as you alluded to, you had a lot of these people who used Twitter's API and the access to it to program these bots. So in this case, the bots are the software communicating with the Twitter software. And there were so many lovely, lovely bots that, you know, whether they're about like, you know, auto art, like, you know, they're just putting different pieces of art in your feed, or they're putting out all the lyrics to Boys Are Back in Town or something like that, just on a loop. Like, yeah, they truly were one of the most delightful parts of Twitter.
They really were. It reminded me in a lot of ways, because everything reminds me of this, but it reminded me of Tumblr in that it had this ability to queue post, which Twitter for the longest time did not actually allow you to schedule tweets. So if you wanted to tweet something in advance, you had to physically remember to tweet it, unless you had a third party app which used Twitter's API to post to Twitter. So like TweetDeck, or if you use apps like Tweet Deleter to delete your tweets, which a lot of people do. That's how people's feeds that look like they only have 5 tweets, but they've been around since 2008. That's why they look like that, because their tweets auto-delete.
Right. Well, honestly, smart.
Smart. I think about doing it every month, and then I look at my old tweets, and I'm like, that's a record of genius that everyone should have access to. And I will probably go down for that at some point, but at least you all know why. So basically, access to Twitter's API, which was previously free, would now, under this new plan, cost somewhere between $99 and $2,499, depending on what package you bought. There's like premium levels. And Elon said that the $99 fee, along with ID verification for Twitter's API, would help clean up, quote, bad bots, aka the ones that are racist and spam. But that doesn't feel true to me. And I don't know why, but it just doesn't feel true to me. From what I know of how people use Twitter's API, I feel like a lot of the harassment does not come through that.
Yeah. I mean, you can look at a sort of complimentary example of this with the whole Twitter Blue fiasco, where it's like, okay, yeah, I'm going to charge now for people to take up their blue check marks. But it's like, who's coming back and getting the blue check marks except for all the Nazis that were booted off Twitter and now under Elon's regime want more prominence? And so they're the ones forking it out. And that's why in just about every country where Twitter is still pretty important, you're still seeing more surges of hate speech, hateful rhetoric, and just like really, really awful sentiments coming across unprompted off people's feeds. And yeah, I don't have any confidence that this will take out any bots that are, you know, a little more toward the racist, sexist, misogynistic end of things, because these, again, it's like, who is still on the platform? Who are Twitter users? And two, who are the Twitter users with the means and inclination to pay for this? And it's usually the far right folks who are newly re-embracing Twitter now that they're allowed back on. So I definitely expect to see a lot more of those bots and a lot fewer of the really fun, wholesome bots.
The wholesome bots. I have so many favorites of these wholesome bots. There's the Ann Carson bot, which tweets out lines from Ann Carson. And I'm going to be completely honest, I'm not entirely sure why I follow this bot, because I have never read any of Ann Carson's work besides the ones that appear on this Twitter. But every time I see one of these lines, I just think, maybe I should read more. There's the Infinite Scream bot, which just screams. And if you tag it in response to something that makes you scream, it'll scream for you, which is relatable and necessary. And there are just so many others that I can't think of right now, because there's truly an infinite amount. And a lot of these bots were legitimately public goods. Obviously, the fun ones are public goods because fun is a public good. But there were bot accounts like Trump's Alert and Big Tech Alert, which would both tweet when someone from the Trump family or tech CEO followed or unfollowed someone, which really gave us a lot of information at various times.
That was
in the
huge
past 6 years.
Yeah.
The API change would also kill bots like Alt Text Utilities, which is a lot like the Thread Unscroller bot, which basically, if you tag them in response to a tweet with an image, this bot will add alt text so that people who use screen readers can know what the image says, which is like a huge accessibility issue. All this to say that the announcement that the bots would basically be killed was just immediately met with public outcry in a way that I have not seen since Twitter Blue was announced. Like, The tweet announcement from the Twitter dev account has over 68,000 quote tweets, which I would say is a pretty good indication of discourse started.
Yep.
And a lot of those quote tweets are bots basically playing near my god to these, saying, so long, farewell, we had a good run. I'm not paying $100 to post my favorite ship every hour on the hour.
God.
And it seems to have worked, at least for now, because on Sunday, February 5th, Elon Musk tweeted in response to Pepito the cat, which is a beloved camera feed of a cat named Pepito that uses Twitter API. And Elon said that responding to feedback, Twitter will enable a light, write-only API for bots providing good content that is free. Who decides if the content is good? Unclear, but it seems great for bots that are tweeting lyrics and possums every hour. But it doesn't help bots that require input, which means responding to a tweet like the alt text accounts I mentioned earlier. So those bots still are being affected by this API change. So this is the new announcement on Sunday is kind of a half win at best. Like, I will still get my Hozier lyrics, but I people will not be able to read images on Twitter if they have a screen reader. So one of those seems more important than the other.
Yeah, like, I mean, this is another classic like Elon half-assed policy measure that he just like tweeted out, which, like, by the way, remember when he had that poll saying, should I step down? And
yes,
everyone said he should step down. Yeah, I wonder how that CEO search is going. Not that anyone wants to take it out after him.
But while we wait to see if anybody is going to fill in the large shoes of one apartheid Clyde, it's time for a short break. When we come back, I will be explaining to Tish the rise and attempted takedown of TikTok's favorite food influencer, Keith Lee.
Where to Be a Woman is the podcast celebrating the best of women's well-being. I'm Sophia Smith-Gaylor.
And I'm Saatchi Kaul.
And we're on a quest to find out where in the world women are living their best lives.
We're hearing from some incredible women about what their countries are getting right.
And picking the best bits for our female fantasy land. Because you can't build it if you can't imagine it first. Where to Be a Woman from the BBC World Service.
Listen now wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
I'm Alex Schwartz.
I'm Nomi Fry.
I'm Vincent Cunningham, and this is Critics at Large, a New Yorker podcast for the culturally curious.
Each week, we're going to talk about a big idea that's showing up across the cultural landscape, and we'll trace it through all the mediums we love. Books, movies, television, music, art.
And I always want to talk about celebrity gossip, too.
Of course.
We hope you'll join us for new episodes each Thursday. Follow Critics at Large today, wherever you get podcasts.
Hi, y'all. If you love our podcast, then please consider subscribing to Slate Plus. When you subscribe to Slate Plus, you get no ads on any Slate podcasts, including this one. You'll be supporting the show. ICYMI would not be possible without the support of Slate Plus subscribers. And you'll also get bonus segments or episodes on shows like Slow Burn, Amicus, Mom and Dad Are Fighting, and Working. You will also get unlimited reading on the Slate website, which means you get access to every single article and advice column on Slate without ever hitting the paywall. Just visit slate.com/ICYMI+ to sign up. That is slate.com/ICYMI+. And we're back to answer a question about Keith Lee, his rise, and the drama that recently engulfed him. But before we get started, Tish, what do you know? What do you know about Mr. Keith? Mr. Lee. Mr. Lee is more accurate.
Literally nothing.
Perfect. I love that answer. So Keith is a 26-year-old former MMA fighter who's been making videos on TikTok since 2020, not about MMA at all. He told Business Insider that he started posting to help with his social anxiety, which is extremely relatable content. Lexpro, girlies, hello, I am one of you.
Who among us?
Truly. SSRI gang, rise up. Like, I would say most influencers, it took him a while to find his, like, niche. Most influencers don't start off and just immediately catapult to fame. He's always been in the food space, though. He started 2022 with 1 million TikTok followers, and that number stayed, like, pretty consistent until November.
What happened in November?
He started reviewing Las Vegas restaurants, and he gained over 7 million followers in 3 months.
Oh, wow.
Astronomical.
Yeah, literal 700% increase.
Truly, in 3 months. But before we get into the why, I'm going to show you what a typical Keith review video looks like.
This guy waits all day for customers to walk in. But nobody
that
does.
Looks good, Jose.
I want to change that.
That looks good, bro.
I got it. Let's try it and rate it 1 to 10. The customer service was really good. The same guy you see in his video is the person who helped me. He was nice. He was kind. He took his time. He gave me a 24-ounce smoothie when I asked for a 16-ounce smoothie because he made a mistake. And
I was drawn right in, honestly. Like, that guy knows how to hook you. Like, I gotta be honest, when it comes to TikToks, I'm still a Vine baby. I'm very much all about the shorter videos, but if you can draw me in for an over minute long review, like, that's skill.
It is. And I think that actually really accurately sums up, like, the appeal of Keith's most popular videos. He will come across or be tagged in the comments of videos of a struggling small business, and he'll basically go and see whether the issue for their struggles is the food or the marketing. His reviews just really come across to me as hype-free in a way, which is really kind of hard to find on TikTok. When he posts about these restaurants, these videos have massive real-world impacts. Like, the owner of Frankincense told Las Vegas ABC affiliate KTNV he went from making $400 a day to selling out daily. After posted his review. Yeah. And this happens all the time.
Wow. Okay. This is a literal tastemaker. My God. Mm-hmm. This is like the kind of power that, like, restaurant critics in California had back in, like, the 40s, maybe? Like,
yes. He's also collabed with charity influencer and local chaos agent, Mr. Beast.
Oh my goodness. Mr. Beast.
Unfortunately, we do have to move on to the actual drama of this, which does not involve Mr. Beast, surprisingly. So, about 2 weeks ago, a TikToker at the handle of Jilly Willy, who is a freelance producer, claimed that a creator on TikTok who is, quote, beloved by all, stole an idea from her after she pitched an idea to them. She didn't name who the creator was, but she did write in the caption, "I'm frustrated and disappointed that they just stole my idea. It's never happened to me before, and I'm not sure what my next decision is going to be. Hashtag why steal, hashtag food critic and thief."
I didn't know if I was going to address this or not, but I'm just so disappointed and so frustrated about the situation that I think I'm just going to have to say something. I'm Jillian. I'm a TV producer. I am a freelance TV producer.
So 2 days after she posts this, Keith responds, basically saying that a producer reached out to him to pitch a TV show idea that would involve him dressing up in disguise and reviewing items from various restaurants. But he also clarified that he's heard that same idea from his followers all the time.
It's some unnamed controversy going around, and I keep getting brought up. And I had an interaction with this person who made the video. So let's talk about it.
Wow. Oh my goodness.
I think this man is one of the most popular and also least offensive in any way people that we've talked about on this show. And I'm not the only one who thinks that, because the comments on this post really, I think, underscore how hard people ride for this man. Here's just a little sampling. Not today, Jillian. Not today. We love this man. He's a beautiful soul. And in all caps, all weapons formed against Keith Lee shall not prosper.
Wow. So, yeah, but what happened next? Did this resolve at all?
So the hashtag Jillian TV producer has over 2.3 million views now.
Oh, no.
Almost all the videos are just saying she's a low-down lying liar, basically. And eventually she posts a video basically saying that she wasn't referring to Keith. So here's that video.
Keith, this is for you. That video was not about you. And I did not think that you would think that that video was about you because our interactions were very minimal.
So that video just made me feel pretty about right. This entire thing. Like, Jillian is a Black woman who's talking about a frustrating situation where someone stole her idea. She didn't mention anybody in the first video. And then everybody assumed that it was Keith and was flooding her comments saying, is it Keith? Is it Keith? Is it Keith? As he said in this video. And she's gotten like a ton of hate for it. Like, she says later in that video that somebody was celebrating her miscarriages with hashtag in Keith Lee we trust,
which is
fucked up. Yeah. And Keith specifically said he didn't want any negativity promoted in his name and that he was clearing up a situation. And on Jillian's part, before Keith responded, she didn't shut down any of the speculation in her comment section that it was Keith, which she probably should have. But as, you know, with most cases like this, I just wish this entire thing had been handled privately because it's just bad.
It's like no matter what the platform is, no matter what the situation is, you'll always have some like army of stans ready to carry out the worst things on someone else's behalf. Someone who they don't know.
Someone who they don't know who is telling them not to do that.
Right, exactly.
And like most of those cases where a stan army gets activated, it's now a giant joke because people are making videos that Keith stole things from them, like drinking water or like having dreadlocks to, I guess, highlight how ridiculous Jillian's complaint was.
That Jill woman is not lying on Keith. I'm gonna tell you something. Keith stole an idea from me too. Okay? I woke up one morning and I was like, I probably should eat something. Next thing I know, I switch on my TikTok and Keith is busy eating as well. Coincidence? I think not.
And that's basically the end of the story. Keith's ascendancy remains untouched. I fully expect him to have a TV show in the next year or so. And I'll probably be tuning in. And, you know, my producer, Daniel Schrader, said maybe even Jillian will get to produce it.
That would be the best possible coming together for this. And if that happens, I'm definitely watching.
Okay, that is the show. We'll be back in your feed on Saturday, so please subscribe. It is the best way to never miss an episode, to never miss a mailbag episode, to never miss a read receipts, because it is pronounced read receipts. Please leave a rating and review in Apple or Spotify and tell your friends about us. Tell your Tophers about us. I bet there are more of you out there. You can follow us on Twitter at @icymi_pod, which is also where you can DM us your questions like, why is this child taking over my FYP? You can also always drop us a note at icymi@slate.com.
ICYMI is produced by Daniel Schrader and Rachel Hampton, with special thanks to Sierra Spragley-Ricks. Daisy Rosario is our senior supervising producer, and Alicia Montgomery is Slate's vice president of audio. See you online!
Or in Las Vegas.